The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 13th, 2016, and this is KUAF 91.3 FM, your NPR news station for 31 years. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by the City of Eureka Springs, trademarked the Wedding Capital of the South, featuring a variety of wedding venues, caterers, and reception halls for the intimate event to the opulent. Information regarding wedding packages, tips, parties, and luncheons available at eurekasprings.org/weddings. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
In a few minutes on Ozarks, a vigil at a Fayetteville church last night let people come together to mourn for the victims and their families of the Sunday shooting in Orlando. First, flags in Arkansas are to be flown at half staff through sunset Thursday in honor of the victims of the attacks in Orlando, Florida. The presidential proclamation orders American and state flags to be flown at half staff on all public buildings and grounds.
Arkansas's senior United States Senator John Bozeman is denouncing the attacks in Orlando. He says he joins every American in mourning for the victims. He called the attack an act of terrorism and that the country must have the resolve to defeat ISIS. Rick Crawford, Arkansas's first congressional congressman, says the word tragic isn't sufficient to describe the shooting early Sunday. He says he thinks the country has to address what he sees as a root of the problem.
This is all part and parcel of this radical Islam agenda, and I think we have to first understand that radical Islam exists, and we have to be unafraid to confront it in that context. And this president certainly is not willing to address radical Islamic terrorism, and he's okay with using the term terrorism, but we'll get some rhetoric from him later, I'm sure, that may seek to redirect this and sort of. As you heard, he wants to make this an issue of gun violence rather than terrorism. Even though he did use the term terrorism, he was also quick to comment and tie this in with other shootings that have occurred in the past.
The man identified as the shooter was born in the United States. Officials say he did pledge allegiance to ISIS in a 911 call during the attack, although officials say they have not yet found a direct link between the terrorist group and the gunman.
The Democratic Party of Arkansas is sending 40 delegates to the National Convention in Philadelphia next month. The state party held its convention at the University of Central Arkansas over the weekend. Spokesman H.L. Moody says delegates were chosen from a range of diverse backgrounds and experience levels.
Some people who got elected have been elected to actual office before and have been very active in the party over the years. Some of them are very well known. Arkansans, at least within the Democratic Party, and some of them were complete newcomers.
Of the 40 state Democratic delegates, 22 are for Hillary Clinton, 10 are for Bernie Sanders, 4 are superdelegates, and 3 are alternatives.
Ken McCown will be the next head of the Department of Landscape Architecture at the University of Arkansas. He is a professor and former chair in the Department of Landscape Architecture in the College of Design at Iowa State University. He'll assume his duties with the Fay Jones School of Architecture and Design July 1st. He was selected from 3 finalists after a campus search committee reviewed 13 initial applicants.
There is at least a chance of rain in the region's forecast through tomorrow night. Precipitation chances for the Arkansas River Valley in northwest Arkansas are in the 40 to 50% range through late tonight, and there is a slight chance for rain tomorrow and tomorrow night. High heat and high humidity are also in tomorrow's forecast for the River Valley, with heat index values tomorrow afternoon possibly reaching 105.
This is Ozarks at Large. A spontaneous vigil was held last night in Fayetteville following a massacre inside a gay nightclub in Orlando early Sunday morning. According to official reports, a suspected gunman opened fire on more than 300 people, killing at least 49 and injuring scores of others before he was shot and killed by police. The Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality hosted the vigil at St. Paul's Episcopal Church to commemorate the victims and their loved ones. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich was there, and she has this report.
The LGBT community in Northwest Arkansas reacted swiftly to the news coming out of South Florida Sunday morning. By evening, more than 400 turned out for a candlelight vigil and prayer service led by Reverend Lowell Grisham, pastor of St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Fayetteville.
We come together in grief and outrage, in horror and deep sadness. May we be strong enough to overcome violence with nonviolence, to defeat hate with compassion. We pray that ignorance and evil can be transformed by wisdom and love.
Various speakers followed, some rousing the crowd, others bringing them to tears, including Jordan Tradewell, who sang a song precious to the LGBT community. June is usually a time of celebration for the LGBT community, traditionally filled with pride events. But Susan Hartman, spokesperson for the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, says Sunday's violence has changed things.
For how many years now? Decades after decades, we've seen particularly our bars as safe places, places we can go be whoever we want to be when we walk through those doors. You know, I think what this means going forward, at this point in time, I think it's kind of hard to tell.
After the service, couples, groups, and families holding flickering candles walked out of the church into the night down Dixon Street. The vigil is a stark counterpoint to a year punctuated by major LGBT civil rights progress, marriage equality, and passage of numerous municipal non-discrimination ordinances in Arkansas, including in Fayetteville. Still, of the nearly 80,000 LGBT Arkansans who live in Arkansas, half have experienced harassment at school or on the street, with one quarter encountering discrimination in the workplace. And Sunday morning's massacre at a popular gay club in Orlando, Florida, is now counted as the largest mass shooting in U.S. history.
I'm John Forrest Alice, and I'm walking for all the LGBT folks that we lost in Orlando and the allies who were in the bar that night, who were in a space that they thought was safe, where they were with their friends and family and suffered the greatest tragedy of all. And it's a good reminder of why in this month of Pride we need to stand together as a community and support each other and fight so hard for the same rights that our other residents in the region have.
On Sunday afternoon, U.S. President Barack Obama offered his condolences to the nation.
This is an especially heartbreaking day for all of our friends, our fellow Americans who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. The place where they were attacked is more than a nightclub. It is a place of solidarity and empowerment where people have come together to raise awareness, to speak their minds, and to advocate for their civil rights. So this is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans.
Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality will stage its 10th annual Pride event next weekend as planned. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Thank you.
Although women make up nearly half of the working population, they remain underrepresented in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM for short. According to a 2013 report from the U.S. Census Bureau, 26% of STEM workers are women and 74% are men.
We definitely want to change that. We really, more than being involved with STEM, we want to emphasize that girls can create anything that they want and they have that capability to do anything they want to do.
Manisha Singh is the external director of Maker Girl. The nonprofit, launched in November 2014 at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, with the mission of inspiring girls to be active in STEM. The group works on achieving this goal by providing 3D printing classes for girls 7 to 10 years old.
So, like, we 3D printed these letters.
Oh, I thought these were made out of wood.
Yeah, it looks like it, right?
Last week, Maker Girl hosted some 3D printing demonstrations throughout Northwest Arkansas, including one outside the Fayetteville Town Center. Singh says this is the first time they've been able to present these sessions across the country.
Well, we've been in Champaign for a while, and we've noticed that, like, we've had an impact on the girls that are coming. We've seen so many girls come in, and they keep wanting to come back, and we wanted to spread that to a lot of other places. We're especially trying to target communities that have underserved and underrepresented populations just because they don't have access to these things, and we want to target those girls rather than people that sometimes already have that in their community.
Maker Girl is able to be mobile this summer thanks to a successful Kickstarter campaign that raised more than $32,000. The summer road trip includes stops in approximately 50 cities over the course of 8 weeks. There are several aspects to STEM occupations, so why focus on 3D printing?
It's something new, it's fun, and the biggest thing I think for us is the design process. With 3D printing, you can really like make something from start to finish, and we want to emphasize that with the girls that they can make their own thing, whatever they want it to be, and they get to take it home with them immediately.
As a woman studying economics and math, Singh has personal experience with being a minority in her field.
So we have a math club at our school kind of for other math majors to come together and talk, and I went to one of the meetings and I was the only girl in the room, and there were about 30 people. So it definitely feels out of place, and you know, there are a lot of other students that understand that, and they're very open and communicating about it, and they, like, you know, they're not like, oh, just because you're a girl, we're not going to listen to your ideas, but unfortunately there are other students that still don't understand that that's a problem. So just, yeah, we face it on our campus a lot.
While visiting Northwest Arkansas, Maker Girl gave young girls the opportunity to design their own objects and then create them using a 3D printer.
The way this works is if you scroll through it, there's a bunch of different shapes.
We know.
Oh, you guys know?
Yeah.
Do you guys use this one?
Yes.
Okay.
We did in school.
We did? You guys are all good then.
What should we do?
Because some of the participants were familiar with the software used to create an object, the real challenge was deciding what to make.
A chicken rabbit.
Olivia Trimble brought her two daughters and one of their friends to the Fayetteville session. Trimble says she tries to take advantage of as many opportunities that are geared toward elementary-aged girls as she can.
It's super important to us to encourage the girls to explore STEM fields and to kind of build the interest now at an elementary age before they get older and get distracted or pick up on some of the socially driven narrative towards girls in science that we've traditionally had.
Trimble's daughters will be entering kindergarten and fourth grade at Leverett Elementary in August. She says it's been a little easier to find opportunities to expose her children to STEM, particularly at school.
I think we have a lot of really fantastic teachers, administrators, and parents who are snapping up opportunities left and right. So for the public, for our public school, I feel like there are tons of opportunities, but within the community, I think that we're having issues with opportunities that are affordable for most families that are also geared towards younger kids. So that's our biggest struggle, is to find something that we can send them to without breaking the bank.
More information about this program is available at makergirl.us.
What grade are you guys in?
We're going into fifth.
Fifth? Okay. Do you like science in your school?
Sometimes.
Thank you.
ahead on this edition of Ozarks, as we wrestle with the latest massive act of violence in the United States, we consider another that happened a year ago this week. After 9 congregants of a church in Charleston, South Carolina, were murdered, it was hoped productive discussions about race and oppression might develop. And while some of those conversations did take place, not all of the dialogue has been constructive.
Black Lives Matter is here and considered by them to be a clear and present threat to their levels of comfort. So when things come and we see them as a threat to our everyday existence, we have a problem with them. I remember back in the 60s and 80s, people forget, talking about Trump today, I don't see a whole lot of difference between what Trump is saying and what I don't see anything different, but times are different.
Discussing the national conversation about civil rights, the presidential campaigns, and more with South Carolina Congressman James Clyburn, who is in Arkansas this weekend for a speaking event. That's ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
On the next Fresh Air, Claire Hoffman tells us about growing up in a community devoted to transcendental meditation, where parents would meditate for hours.
Parents are sort of going off with these blissful smiles to go meditate, and we would, you know, be trying to break open vending machines and shoplifting and God knows what else.
Hoffman's new memoir is Greetings from Utopian Park. Join us.
Fresh Air tonight at 6 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It is Monday, June 13th, 2016. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley, who is with Talk Business and Politics. Happy Monday, Michael.
Well, happy Monday to you as well.
I want to talk about something that is new in Fort Smith and something that's about to be new in Fort Smith. Let's start with the is new, and that's the Friends of UAMS. This just kind of formed recently, right?
Yes, sir, which I somewhat found as a surprise because UAMS has been active in the Fort Smith area for a long time with the AHEC program, Area Health Education Centers, which is not called that, and I apologize, the new name has just slipped my mind, but they recently met with Chancellor Dan Run in Fort Smith, and he talked about really the challenges and kind of laid out why they're creating these friends chapters around the state. It really boils down, as many things do in the healthcare, especially in the healthcare sector, to money. And, you know, he's explained that essentially the bottom line is that they get a budget from the state and from patient revenue to keep the operating budget going every year. But one thing they don't do is get enough money to really do facility support, you know, and take care of the assets. And anyone that runs a business, or especially a large operation with buildings and equipment, you know, you've got to take care of that over time. You've got to have a good capital budget. And so that's something that he's trying to drum up support for. And, you know, we'll see what kind of capital campaign may emerge from all of these friends chapters from around the state. But like I said, they've been very active in Fort Smith. They're investing in this a new $10 million-plus clinic that's next to Sparks Health System in Fort Smith, which will significantly increase their square foot and their ability to operate and serve patients in the Fort Smith area. And again, a reminder, I mean, that's UAMS, University of Arkansas for Medical Science, is a research facility. It trains a lot of physicians in the state. And this clinic in Fort Smith, and they're 8 to 10, I think, around the state. You know, that's where residents go, where people that are in their medical training go to get, you know, the real world experience. So, you know, for the future of healthcare in Arkansas, let's hope they do well. You know, a majority of the residents from their program end up in Western Arkansas. So, it's good for our part of the world.
And one of the reasons it's hard to get that capital money is because it can be very enticing to get people to invest in, you know, research and projects and things that save lives. And it's not as sexy sometimes to say, we just need to, you know, keep the roof in good shape.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can go to UAMS, the facility, the very impressive facility there in Little Rock, and see a lot of names on the buildings. But you're not going to see a name back on the physical plant that generates electricity, you know. So you're right. That's a great point, Kyle. But that is just as important as, you know, having, you know, a new shiny facility.
All right, that's the is new. The should be new soon is food trucks in downtown Fort Smith. The board of directors last week talked about it, and they kind of went with their own direction. They want at least three trucks, understandably, to generate traffic.
Right, and this has been, there's just been an interesting sea change in how the city views downtown. And there's always been pushback against food trucks in Fort Smith. And a lot of that is because I think we didn't really understand food trucks. We see them as the old, you know, you've got a guy from or a family from somewhere, and they're pulling an old trailer that's, you know, rickety and barely holding up. And we haven't accepted that this mobile food truck business now, it's very modern, it's accepted, it's regulated. And but I think now we're seeing that, and you have several Fort Smith board members who are essentially telling the city staff, look, go make it happen, write rules and regulations that encourage, that provide incentive for mobile food truck vendors to come downtown. And even Vice Mayor Kevin Settle added on at the recent meeting, said, look, let's provide those where they can work in other city parks. And, you know, Kyle, it's been, as you know, the last couple of years, there have been some very positive changes in downtown Fort Smith. With the Murals Festival, Steel Horse Rally, Peacemaker Festival, we have two pretty, what I think are impressive statues on either end of the avenue, one of General Darby, one of Bass Reeves, legendary U.S. Marshal. And, you know, I think, like I said earlier, there's been a wholesale change in how folks view the downtown area. And that's, it's been a very pleasant surprise that that really seemed to turn so quickly. It's just my opinion, and my opinion only, that there was really pent-up demand for something to happen in that area. And it just took some leadership. And when the city didn't provide that, the private sector did through those events that I just mentioned. And now I think the city board is saying, hey, all right, yeah, let's maximize this. Now let's get in the game. And I'm not at all being critical of the city. I think it's great that they're finally acknowledging that they need to do something to build upon that.
Sometimes when a region begins to get food trucks, there are some either chain restaurants or permanent brick and mortar restaurants that have a problem with it. Have you heard any of that in Fort Smith?
Yes. I mean, that's always been the pushback. The restaurant owners, especially the local restaurant owners, you know, have pushed back. But look, some of these food trucks now are owned by the
extensions.
Local, the brick and mortar, as you said, store owners. And plus, look, you know, that the mobile food truck business now, it's a legitimate business. And the Department of Health regulates them. And so if there's an opportunity for them to operate, you know, we don't shut down a Walmart permit just because there's, as we talked Friday, because there's a Harp store nearby. I mean, so I think it's good to see that what I would call protectionism is diminishing as a factor in this discussion.
All right. Michael Tilley's work is not diminishing. You can find out all kinds of stories at talkbusiness.net. We'll talk to you again on Friday, Michael. How's that?
That'll work. Thanks, Kyle.
This is KUAF. With help from Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northwest Arkansas, the Community Spotlight focuses on child mentoring this month. Sarah Heimer, Executive Director, talks about the steps it takes to becoming a big.
For the past 20 years, Big Brothers Big Sisters has had a chapter in Northwest Arkansas, forming mentoring matches in Washington and Benton counties. There is a significant need for Big Brothers Big Sisters type mentoring in our Northwest Arkansas region, and we currently have over 40 children on our waiting list, many whom are boys. I suspect if we were really out soliciting littles, we could have 1,000. To become a big is not difficult, but there are prescribed steps involved, as our program staff needs to determine that a potential volunteer is interested for the right reasons. Obviously, child safety is a top priority. A potential big must be 18 or older, willing to commit to at least a year to being a big, and meet certain other criteria. The screening includes an in-depth interview of the potential big, positive recommendations from three references, and background checks. When the candidate has passed all of those, they will go through a short training that teaches the volunteer about mentoring as well as the culture of poverty. Once the big is accepted into the program, we look carefully to see what little to put them with. When creating a match, a number of characteristics are taken into consideration, including gender, ethnicity, location, and interests. We want the match to be as meaningful, enjoyable, and long-term as possible. So we strive to put those with similar interests together, the athlete with the athlete, the artist with the artist, and the scholar with the scholar. And then we monitor, which means we provide the big, little, and the parent with structured program support so that our program staff can quickly answer their questions and provide helpful hints when needed. Establishing a trusting relationship with someone doesn't happen overnight, and our program staff can definitely facilitate this, as well as provide suggestions for match activities. For that first year, we proactively contact the big, the little, and the little's parents on a monthly basis to ensure all is going well. After the first year, we check in quarterly. Of course, a big, little, or their parent can reach out to us at any time with a question or concern. Everything is free to the little, their family, and the big. In addition to having big brothers and big sisters, we can have big couples and big families. Please listen to our next segment to see if one of them might be right for you.
For more information, go online, bbbsnwa.org. This is KUAF, where local matters.
It's been nearly a year since 9 people were shot and killed in a Charleston, South Carolina church. Issues of oppression still hang in the air, with rhetoric from the presidential race fomenting yet more division. Jacob Kaufman, with our partner station KUAR, spoke with South Carolina Congressman James Clyburn last week as he prepared to come to Arkansas to speak at a Democratic Party of Arkansas event.
Anyone who lived during parts of the civil rights movement, they can easily tell you how divided and vicious life could be. But from today's vantage point, for a lot of people, at least nearly everyone in authority shows great admiration and allegiance to the deceased icons of that movement. Today, the Black Lives Matter movement, though, some call it a logical extension of some of those past struggles. Others have no problem demeaning it and trying to discredit it. What sort of parallels do you think are fair to draw between the two? Are they worthy of some sort of shared sense of identity?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I find it kind of interesting that people who are not aware of the 60s would not know that King was vilified, Martin Luther King Jr. was vilified throughout the country. I mean, he didn't meet his untimely death out of any kind of love, but he was hate. I was part of the organizing body of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. John Lewis and I first met in 1960 as a part of that effort. We were vilified. There were people who did not support what we were doing. There were people in my own family, people in the church that I grew up in, who did not support what we were doing. People look back on that now and is glorified in the movie Selma. John Lewis is lionized here in the Congress and elsewhere. Around the country, Martin Luther King Jr. is revered and quoted by people who would have spat upon him back in the 60s. So that's just the way we seem to be when the people are no longer a threat of challenging who and what we are. We tend to celebrate them. Black Lives Matter, to me, is no more onerous than SNCC was in my day, and I think that they have a useful purpose.
But what do you think it means, then, about people who can so easily, particularly public figures, so easily compliment someone like Martin Luther King Jr. or the Civil Rights Movement, but they will reject Black Lives Matter?
Well, because Black Lives Matter is here and considered by them to be a clear and present threat to their levels of comfort. So when things come and we see them as a threat to our everyday existence, we have a problem with them. I remember back in the 60s and 80s, people forget, talking about Trump today, I don't see a whole lot of difference between what Trump is saying and what I don't see anything different. But but times are different.
Well, if you most Republicans on the national scene and most Republicans in Arkansas as well, talking about Donald Trump, they'll be pretty clear and say that they disapprove of the tone of Donald Trump and reject the comments. Some will even call the comments racist themselves, but they will still endorse him anyway as the Republican nominee. What does that say to you, that someone could reject someone as offering racist commentary but still support them as a presidential candidate?
I don't get overly carried away by people's expressions. It's how they conduct themselves that's controlling, as far as I'm concerned. In fact, it's biblical. You know by your deeds, not your words. And so when people tell me that what Trump says is racist, yet I'm going to support him, it's your deed. That, to me, means you condone what he said. You wouldn't vote for somebody unless you condone their policies.
Jacob Kaufman with our partner station KUAR in Little Rock talked to South Carolina Congressman James Clyburn last week. Clyburn was in Arkansas this week to speak at a Democratic Party of Arkansas event. Governor Asa Hutchinson says he and the legislature have approved a $100,000 gift to the Morgan Nick Foundation. Colleen Nick started the foundation after her daughter Morgan was abducted from Alma in 1995. She says the donation will allow the foundation to increase its educational outreach.
We have an educator on staff who goes out and talks to one person, one educator, who talks directly, face-to-face, with more than 30,000 children across our state every year. This money from the governor will allow us to expand those efforts.
Governor Hutchinson says the foundation has done a good job of working with law enforcement officials to help reduce the possibilities of child abduction.
The foundation has engaged in educating children and parents about the danger of abduction and what steps can be taken to prevent an abduction, to alert them to the fear, to the possibility, and the steps to be taken. And so it's a response capability, it is an alert, but it is also an education effort.
Last year, the foundation awarded Representative Bill Gossage from Ozark a Morgan's Choice Award for his work obtaining $100,000 of funding to train child abduction response teams in police forces across the state.
The KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival continues its eighth season with a cello sonata and piano quintet from composer Frank Bridge on Thursday, June 16th at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall. Performers include the U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists. Admission is free. FulbrightSummerMusic.uark.edu for more information.
And KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include radiation, CLIA-certified labs, a multidisciplinary lung clinic, and a lung cancer screening program. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com.
On the next morning edition, we'll continue broadcasting from here in Orlando, Florida, in the wake of the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. Morning edition is on the streets, talking to people and seeing how this community is coping. I'm David Green, reporting on the latest in Orlando. That's on the next morning edition.
That's Morning Edition, tomorrow morning from 5 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. In fact, you can hear Morning Edition every weekday morning from 5 until 9 on KUAF. Now, there are some changes coming to KUAF's weekend schedules. Let's start with Saturdays. There are just two editions of What Do You Know left. Michael Feldman will end his public radio career with a special two-hour finale Saturday morning, June 25th. That's the final What Do You Know ever. So then, the following Saturday, with no What Do You Know in existence, Ask Me Another moves up 1 hour and will be heard at 10 every Saturday morning after Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Then America's Test Kitchen will be heard at 11 every Saturday morning beginning in July. Also leaving the airwaves very soon, Garrison Keillor is ending his decades-long run with his final live edition of A Prairie Home Companion. That's Saturday, July 2nd. You can hear it live, 5 to 7 that day on KUAF. And then on Sunday afternoon, July 3rd, the encore presentation. But that also means there will be other changes to Saturday afternoon and evening schedules beginning July 9th. Saturday afternoons beginning on July 9th, Big Picture Science will be heard at noon, followed by Tech Nation at 1, Planetary Radio at 2, and Living Planet at 2:30. And at Saturdays at 3, beginning July 9th, we'll have the program Latino USA. And replacing Garrison Keillor and the Prairie Home Companion on Saturday evenings will be Woodsong's Old Time Radio Hour with our friend Michael Jonathan. That will be at 5 every Saturday beginning July 9th, followed by Ozark Highlands Radio every Saturday night at 6.
It is Monday, June 13th, 2016, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Joining us now is Becca Martin Brown, Features Editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Well, not really.
Right.
Really, it is not Monday. Or if it is Monday, I'm really not here.
It's both, actually.
Okay. I have gone to a medieval war. I hope to be back. And if I'm not, this is the thing you need to do in my memory.
Okay.
No pressure.
All right.
You need to go see one of the Arkansas New Play Festival plays.
And it's starting.
You need to see a bunch of them, but you need to see this one for me if I expire into a puddle of heat stroke.
All right.
They're doing Romeo and Juliet set in Damascus. This is a project that started with a grant, $250,000 to Theater Squared to work 3 years on this project. And Khalid Sawaf, who is from Damascus, is, well, not the playwright. You know, it's William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, but it's doing the adaptation to move this story to a place that people don't know much about. You probably know more about medieval Italy than you do about modern-day Damascus.
That's probably true, yes.
And she's a graduate of the UA with a Master of Fine Arts in directing, and she is working on the adaptation and will also be directing, and this is the first time you'll get to see it. You'll get to see a finished version in many different places sometime over the next 3 years, but this is the script in hand, artists in production. Very cool opportunity to see it now and see what it grows up to be. The shows are at 7 o'clock on the 17th, which is Friday, at Crystal Bridges, and 8 o'clock on the 23rd at the Nadine Baum Studios, home of Theater Squared till they get their building built.
Right.
And it's $10. Also part of the New Play Festival, The Champion by Amy Evans, An Evening with Nina Simone and Her Band. Mm-hmm. Now, that's interesting.
And it takes place at a diner in, I think, 1963 or 64.
62. In a snowstorm.
Right.
Our listeners probably know who Nina Simone is.
Wonderful singer.
Unlike,
wonderful civil rights figure.
This is going to introduce a lot of people mm-hmm. to Nina Simone. That happens, let's see, at 2 o'clock on the 18th and several other times down here that I'll get to. On the 24th, a play called Tectonic Melange by Deborah Yarkin. It's an up-to-the-minute take on the boom and bust frontier of the North Dakota oil business. Now, there's an idea for a play. Happens at 5:30 on the 24th. On the 25th, Andromeda by Gail Pazursky, a comedic drama that finds two women, both old enough to retire but on the financial brink, vying for the same low-paying job at a planetarium.
I like the concept.
Okay. That's at 2 and 8 o'clock. And the 17th and 18th will happen at Crystal Bridges. The rest of the plays will happen at T2's home. There are several versions of the productions, so you need to check out their schedule. And then also this week, If you're looking for something to do Tuesday evening, remember that the Rogers Historical Museum is open from 5 to 8 every Tuesday in June. Wednesday, sandwiched in at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale, fruit growing with Guy Ames of Ames Orchard. Interesting topic. That happens at noon. You can bring your sack lunch, and they have cookies. And then Thursday at the Fayetteville Farmers Market is Kids and Seniors Day, with activities for both from 9 to noon.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is Features Editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, you know how our history doctor, Bill Smith, usually prescribes us a dose of, hold on, that's happened before, when we talk about history? Well, tomorrow he takes a much different stand and says both of the major party presidential nominees represent potential for truly historic ground as either the first truly outside of the government president or the first woman president. And he says the 2016 election could make even more unique history.
Mm-hmm. The political forces that have brought forth these two candidates still threaten to reshape the future courses of their respective parties.
Our history doctor on yes, unprecedented developments on the road to the White House. That's tomorrow on our Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large.
The University of Arkansas Athletic Department claimed a first-ever national championship for a women's program last year when the women's track and field team won the indoor track and field championship. Now, a second national championship trophy is coming to Fayetteville. Saturday night in Eugene, Oregon, the Arkansas women won the outdoor title with 72 points, outdistancing host and runner-up Oregon by 10 points.
And the Arkansas men's team finished the season Friday night with a second-place finish nationally, 6 points behind Florida. With the collegiate season over, many Razorback athletes will next compete in the 2016 U.S. Olympic trials from July 1st through the 10th, again at Hayward Field in Eugene.
Among a weekend of outstanding performances by University of Arkansas athletes, at least one was legendary. Jerrion Lawson won 3 individual events at an NCAA outdoor championship. The last time that happened was when Jesse Owens won the same 3 events in 1936. Lawson this weekend won the 100-meter dash, the 200 meters, and the long jump. Owens captured all 3 events twice in 35 and in 1936.
A few former Razorback baseball players will probably be starting professional careers soon after the Major League Baseball draft was held this weekend. Right-handed pitcher Zach Jackson was picked in the 3rd round by the Toronto Blue Jays, outfielder Clark Egan in the 6th round by Pittsburgh, and right-handed pitcher Dominic Taccolini was selected by Toronto in the 9th round. In all, 6 Arkansas players were taken by Major League Baseball teams this weekend in the annual professional draft.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals will try to snap a 3-game losing streak tonight in North Little Rock. Yesterday, the Nats lost to the Travelers 2-0 to fall 6 games under 500. The Nats finish up their current road trip with a game tonight and another tomorrow night, then return to Arvis Ballpark to start an 8-game homestand Wednesday night.
KUAF is supported by contributing listeners and by KUAF's NPR Society members. Hi, this is Lee Wood, KUAF's Membership Director. KUAF's NPR Society members support the station with gifts of $1,000 or more annually, often breaking that significant gift down into smaller payments of $100 or $150 each month. These sustaining, leadership gifts allow KUAF to direct more resources toward our programming and to plan our growth into the future. If you'd like to become a sustaining NPR Society member, you can do so online at supportkuaf.com, or you can call me at 479-575-7259.
Arkansas Education Commissioner Johnny Key says he is launching a page on the Department of Education's website to connect staff at the department to the public in an effort to better publicize work being done. He told the State Board of Education Friday it is part of his strategic planning initiative termed Vision for Excellence in Education.
And that is where our vision, our mission, our values as an agency, and our goals are there for reference for folks who are working with in the agency, for our partners, and for the general public.
Key says the department is working with the Center for Building State Capacity, a resource of the U.S. Department of Education. Key says he thinks the existence of such a website can lead to exponential growth when it comes to sharing information.
And then others can look on this to say, look, we'd like ADU to come to us and talk about this, or we'd like to give some info. So it gives them the ability then to see what's going on, contact us, and add to the fabric that is the strategic management process that we're going through.
The group Forward Arkansas gave an update to the board and promised the launch of a similar web portal for parents to access information about their students and more in-depth information about work being done by the public-private partnership to address achievement gaps in the state.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Left my home in Arkansas on a Friday afternoon. After me and my baby had a fight, and that ain't right, 'cause I really didn't want to leave my baby all alone. But she wouldn't even open the door or answer the phone.
Charlie Rich was born in Colt, Arkansas, December 14, 1932. The family also lived in Crawfordsville and Forest City. He grew up surrounded by the music of the Arkansas Delta. There was gospel with his parents at church, blues and hillbilly on the radio and in the streets. Then there was the piano he learned from his mother and a black sharecropper named C.J. Allen on his father's farm. Rich's parents were also half of a gospel quartet. After a year studying music at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, and after an injury ended his football career at Arkansas State College in Jonesboro, Rich served a stint in the Air Force in the early 1950s. He then farmed cotton and soybeans on his farm near Forest City and was a weekend musician. But Rich's wife, Margaret Ann, also his high school sweetheart from Forest City and a songwriter herself, thought Charlie had real talent. She helped him swing a deal at nearby Sun Records in Memphis.
Well, I make it all right. Monday morning to Friday night.
In 1957, Charlie Rich signed with Sun, first as a songwriter and session man, and later as a performer. The St. Francis County native also wrote songs for fellow Arkansasier Johnny Cash and other Sun artists like Jerry Lee Lewis. Rich also played in local bars and wrote songs with Margaret Ann. Charlie Rich's own big Sun song was his third single for the label, October 1959's Lonely Weekends, heard here. Although Sam Phillips said Charlie Rich was the only person he recorded who had the talent to top Elvis, Rich never had another hit on Sun Records. Charlie Rich went to RCA's Groove Records and then to Mercury's Smash Records, where he finally had another top 30 single called Mohair Sam. '65's Mohair Sam was Charlie Rich's first top 30 hit since his only one more than 5 years before. While Rich's varied talents were obvious, he struggled with finding the right mix for commercial success. It would be 8 years before Charlie Rich had another big song, but it hit hard and made him an international superstar. Behind Closed Doors and The Most Beautiful Girl in the World were still around the corner. Here in its entirety is Charlie Rich of Colt, Arkansas with Pass On By, an original with Margaret Ann Rich, which seems to have elements of autobiography.
Fame, how you tempt me. My heart beats faster. Not as fast as when I hear my baby's name. Goodbye, fame. Oh, pass on by. Gold, how you glitter. You're every man's dream. When I'm with my baby, I'm rich as any king. Goodbye, gold. Pass on by. So hard to resist.
And I get that same good feeling every time we kiss goodbye wine. Pass on by. Goodbye fame, goodbye gold. She's my life, now owns my soul. Goodbye wine, now she's mine. Pass on by. Pass on by. Pass on by. Pass on by.
East Arkansas natives Charlie Rich of Colt with his wife Margaret Ann Rich's song Pass On By. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of Experiment Station Studios. Producer is Keith Merks. Arkansongs, since 1998.
America's middle class has always been a moving target. Flint, Michigan was once a boomtown.
All is excitement, even the small fry are buzzing.
Today, vacant houses are being torn down.
Our old school is closed and abandoned.
The New Middle, exploring what it means to be middle class in America today, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And we realize, those of us that work on Ozarks at Large, that you can't join us live on the radio every day. Schedules demand that you be somewhere else, but just in case, you can find us as a podcast. For more information, you can go online to KUAF.com or our website, OzarksAtLarge.com. You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or Stitcher or a number of other available ways to find a podcast, as well as listen to us on Apple TV. And if you'd like to learn more about Ozarks at Large or any other program that's on KUAF, KUAF2, or KUAF3, you can also go to KUAF's website, KUAF.com.
Theater Squared welcomes the 2016 Arkansas New Play Festival June 16th through the 26th. It will feature four new plays and one new adaptation of a Shakespearean classic. Plays include The Champion, A Little War in Little Rock, Tectonic Melange, plus Romeo and Juliet, Damascus. Seating is limited, 443-5600 or theater2.org for tickets and information.
A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUA. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Berryville. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a good Monday. Mm-hmm.